I'm with We Count California, which is a collaboration of UC Berkeley School of Public Health and the California Homeless Youth Project. And we've been working for the last 2.5 years or so on helping California's communities try to better include young people in the point-in-time homeless count. We have no relationships to disclose, but maybe to start, get a sense of who's in the room. Can you raise your hand if you know what a point-in-time count is? Oh, awesome. Okay. And have you, anyone who's been part of a point-in-time count? Okay. So this is gonna be cake. You know this. We're already at PJ, so lots of acronyms. Point-in-time count, PIT count, is the homeless count that happens mandated by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. We'll talk a little bit about what that entails. COCs, I'm going to be throwing that phrase around a lot, which stands for Continuum of Care. And often this is sort of split along county lines, and not always. California has about 41 active continuum of care, and these are the jurisdictions that are funded by HUD to provide housing and homelessness programs for their populations. And then TAE, I'll be saying a lot, which stands for Transition Age Youth, who are 18 to 24 years old. So what is a point-in-time count and why do we do them? So as you know, the point-in-time count is a count of persons experiencing homelessness. It's mandated by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and it happens in shelters, so in transitional shelters, emergency shelters, and permanent supportive housing every year. And then for unsheltered folks who aren't in those housing situations, it happens every other year. Communities do this mostly on one specific night that they choose in the last 10 days of January, so they have to choose one night then. And often it looks like a visual count where they have a lot of volunteers go out and canvass the streets and sort of just do a count of how many people they see. And sometimes it's a survey-based count where people are talking to folks. And it's important because it informs the decisions that happen on a local, state, and federal level around services and planning and funding. And I think why we think it's important is that it historically undercounts young people. So here, if you take a look here, we've got some numbers for the unaccompanied, unsheltered minors in California who were counted in 2011, which is blue, and 2013, which is orange. And you see here that it didn't change too much over time in the last two counts. And about a third of our communities counted zero unaccompanied, unsheltered minors. And then about another third counted under 10, which, you know, this is not the biggest population, I think, that we have in the homeless population, but it seems like most communities in California would have more than 10 minors. We're just not counting them in this count. And then here we've got transition age youth, so 18 to 24 years old. And again, unsheltered transition age youth, 2011 in blue, 2013 in orange. And you see a big change here because in 2013, for the first time, communities were required by HUD to report their number of transition-aged youth separately from their adults. And so because we were counting them, they finally get counted. So that's great. That's an improvement. But we do see that about half of the communities were reporting under 100 transition-aged youth. And I just think most of the providers that we talked to in California just felt like that's not the case, that there are a lot of young adults there who just aren't getting counted. And so when that happens, the picture that gets presented to HUD and gets presented to funders is one that eliminates youth and just doesn't include them. So we're going to talk a little bit about why this is and what we've been doing in California to try to make this a little bit better. In 2013, as communities were getting ready to count transition age youth, often for the first time, we set out to talk about what was going on in California. So we talked to 31 of California's COCs and consultants from about 5 different groups who were working with people to just get a sense of what was going on and document what practices people were using, what challenges they were facing, and any kind of recommendations that they had for counting young people. And we found that communities had a lot of information to share about things that they were doing, things that they were testing to try to better include young people. And they ranged really widely in their practices, from doing very minimal changes to data collection standards, all the way up to doing full-blown youth-specific counts. So the first thing that people did was to change their data standards to separate out 18 to 24-year-old people from the general adult population. So in 2013, that was sort of the biggest easy change that you could make, right, is actually to count young people separately. And as you saw, that made a really big difference. We went from about two-thirds of our communities not counting transition-aged youth to all of them doing so. The second changes that people made were around things in the planning process as they got ready for their counts. I think the biggest thing that people could do was talk to their youth and their youth providers about how to better engage these young people in the counting. And as Wendy was talking about, it really is people who are familiar with the population or are coming from the population who are really better equipped to be able to interact with those folks and know where they're coming from and where they are. So they are the experts, and communities talked a lot about doing this. Some communities talked about collaborating with their McKinney Vento school liaisons. So the McKinney Vento Act is a federal act that provides funding for working with homeless students. And the school liaisons often have really good relationships with their students that that the continuum of care didn't have. And so working with them a little bit to try to figure out how to include the school children into the counts was helpful. Samantha Green was here last year at APHA talking about an example from Santa Cruz that was really beautiful, and she's got some good resources for people if you want to engage with your schools about how to do that. And then communities also talked about making changes to their count methods themselves. So during the day of the count, what could they do to make things different? And I think, again, one of the biggest things that you can do is include your youth providers and youth themselves as people who are going out and counting or surveying people. So because they have better relationships already existing, and they're also better able to sort of interact with people on the day of the count. They also talked about incentivizing youth participants, so either youth who were out doing the count or doing surveys, providing incentives for the work that they've done, and also providing incentives to people who engaged in surveys for their time and their participation. Or donuts.
We do donuts.
Oh, well, we're not good enough. Burger King? So then I think one of the big things that one of the most impactful things that communities can do when they're thinking about better including young people in their counts is to really think about where and when their youth can be found. So one example is in San Diego, they were talking about counting youth, and it came up that the truancy officers are really strict, and so nobody's going to be found on the street during school hours because they know they're going to get caught. And then nobody's going to be found after dark either. And so it's really this limited window of time where you can actually go and find youth during the point in time count. And not having that kind of information from your providers or youth would just, you know, you could be out there at midnight and then wonder where everyone was, and it would just not be working for the young people. So talking with youth about where and when is going to be useful. And then communities also talked about making youth-friendly survey questions and making sure that the language in their surveys was non-stigmatizing and was inclusive. And so I think an easy example of this is communities talking about framing the point-in-time count survey as a housing survey rather than a homelessness survey, which I think for our young people who are really cognizant of trying to escape the labels and the stigma associated with homelessness is really important and helps sort of increase buy-in around it. And then finally, some communities did the extra step of incorporating a lot of these different changes into a youth-specific count. So counting young people on a separate day or during a separate time and really focusing on that youth count. There are 9 cities who did a youth study, who were pilot sites for the youth count nationwide. And so the Urban Institute has a nice report here of some examples from those cities. So we heard a lot about really great things that communities were doing to better include their young people, but we also heard a lot of challenges that people were facing. So in 2013, one of the biggest things that people talked about were youth are hard to identify. And as communities are planning for the general count, sort of thinking about the different times and locations where young people should be found is a lot of work that they have to do in addition to their general count planning. And then also, particularly for subgroups of youth who aren't sort of stereotypically identified as homeless. So in California, that comes often as migrant and farm working youth, LGBTQ youth, and youth of color who sort of are couch surfing or less stereotypically like traveler homeless types, that they get left out of the picture quite often. For COCs, some of the issues they faced were having a limited integration of youth service providers. So a lot of times youth service providers are paid for different funding streams, and so they're not on the table with the COC and they're not involved in the count planning. Winter weather conditions, so even in California, it sometimes snows and sometimes rains, and that makes it really hard to count on the street. And then geography. So I think a lot of the point-in-time count methods have been standardized for urban areas, and so communities were a little bit confused about how to apply those methods out to sort of more rural or mixed geographies and how you could count that way. And then finally, the biggest thing that we heard from communities is that it's very hard to fund an unfunded mandate, and so when you don't have money from HUD to do the count, then it makes it really hard to count, especially when your providers are already sort of very stretched thin. Sort of in getting them to be engaged in the count is very difficult. And then communities were also worried about what they were required to report. So if they came across unaccompanied minors, would they be required to report them as mandated reporters? And they were also really worried about these questions about what to do with numbers. So if I change my methods in 2013 to better include young people, is it an apples-to-apples comparison from 2011, or is that different now? And then also, if I change my methods and I'm now including young people and I have a bigger number, what is my community going to say? Am I going to be in trouble because I've increased my youth homelessness number, even though that's not actually the case? And then, finally, a big challenge around conflicting definitions of homelessness. So this is kind of a big issue of contention that we heard, so I'll sort of break it down. The point in time count for the by HUD's definition requires that we count only unsheltered individuals who are sleeping in places not designed for sleep for regular sleeping. And so that, for the most part, omits people who are couch surfing or doubled up. And so if you're talking to youth providers, so for example, if you're talking to your McKinney-Vento provider who works with school children, their definition is a little bit broader and involves people who are doubled up, who are couch surfing, who are experiencing homelessness, and I think a way that we think is more developmentally appropriate for youth as a definition. But they have a different definition, so you can't just lump those numbers together. You have to be able to separate those out. And then if you're working with Runaway and Homeless Youth Act funded providers, their definition is also different. If you're working with HUD providers who are providing housing, their definition is different too. So lots of different definitions that sort of get pitted against each other and numbers that get pitted against each other. As an example, if you look here, we've got numbers of minors reported in 2013. So the two left-hand numbers are from the point in time count. And the right-hand number is from the McKinney-Vento Act in 2013. So these are all people who are under 18 counted in 2013, and you could see how it would create some tensions with people when you're saying my school children aren't being counted in your point-in-time count. I will say, yeah.
Oh, sorry. The school count is like over a year, though? Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so that's one of the things that is, you know, doesn't get considered, I think, often, is that this is over a year versus one night in January. And the other difference is that we're talking about doubled and tripled up people in the school counts who aren't really counting at the point in time count. So this brings me to what we've been doing this year for We Count California. So having heard about all of these different challenges and best practices from communities last year, we set out to try to support some incremental change for communities who were getting ready for their 2015 point-in-time counts. Everybody will be counting this January for the second time counting their transition age youth. So our goal has been to try to help move the needle forward to support youth-inclusive counts, just a little bit of a change at a time across all communities in California. So I'll talk about three different phases that we've been working on. The first one is a series of statewide technical assistance. So this past spring and summer, we did 7 regional trainings in California, so we covered 32 of our continuum of care in 7 different areas across the state. And they were day-long trainings where we invited people like the COC partners, Runaway and Homeless Youth Act providers and other youth providers, and also school liaisons to get together and talk with each other and also with their neighboring continuum of care about what was going on with their counts and sort of planning things. So we worked together with a lot of exercises for planning. So we did some SWOT assessments with people to think about how they could, what was some opportunities for next year's count and what were some threats and how they could address them. We did some mapping with people, so thinking about what youth are in your community, who can help you engage with them, where can they be found. I'm going to go fast now. and we also sort of started to build out a timeline and plan with them. And we found that overall this went well with communities. They really responded well to having a full spectrum of different opportunities that they could do to include young people. So not saying, like, I have to go from here to doing a full-blown perfect youth count, but thinking about, like, what are the small things that I can do between now and that? What is feasible in 2015? They also responded really well. I think one of the best things that we did was provide a space for networking and dialogue among communities, so both across provider groups within the community and also between communities who were neighboring each other and had a lot of things that they could share with each other. And then finally, especially for some of the rural areas like Central California, being willing to go to Fresno to talk to people was very much appreciated, I think. And then the biggest thing I think that we provided that people found helpful was money, because it is an unfunded mandate. So we worked to provide 25 seed grants to communities across the state. So those are all our seed grantees. And these folks are working to pilot different activities to better include young people in this year's count. So they're doing things like creating youth advisory boards and paying youth advisory boards to sort of help them plan their counting. They're creating stipends for people who are going out and doing the count. There's a community thinking about doing social media campaigns to promote the count to other people. So all kinds of interesting things that are going to be happening next year. And lastly, we're doing some shared materials. So we created a Google group to share out some materials from the trainings this spring with people. We also created a survey template for communities who just haven't had the capacity to put together a survey themselves, so they can have at least a skeleton to work with when they're thinking about surveying. So we were thinking about a survey that was brief, that is youth-specific, and that includes multiple definitions, so not just HUD's point-in-time count definition, but lets them look at it from multiple snapshots. So if you want to take a look at that and give us any feedback, that'd be welcome. And then we're currently in the middle of doing a technical assistance phase. So we chose two communities, that's Yolo and Kings Tulare counties, to do some more intensive one-on-one technical assistance. So we've been working with them, and we've provided some more pilot funding for them to do youth-specific counting in 2015. They're doing some really great stuff, and they're more sort of low-resourced, more rural communities. Kings Tulare is about 7,000 square miles. And they are very agricultural. They've been experiencing the sort of the worst impacts of the drought in California this year. So have not been very well resourced, but are really engaged in doing some innovative things. They've been doing Project Homeless Connect in conjunction with their point-in-time count for many years, and they're thinking about sort of youth-specific activities that you can do during the Project Homeless Connect to engage young people. So all kinds of exciting things happening. And then the third thing that we've been doing is working on a push for structural change on a local and a federal level. So federally, we've been trying to get work with some federal partners to get better clarification from HUD about what is required for the count, because I think there's a lot of sort of misinformation going around communities about what is required and what they're going to get dinged for if they do wrong and that kind of thing. And also to advocate for a more developmentally appropriate definition of youth to be used for the point-in-time count, because I think everybody is nodding that the definition that HUD is using for the point-in-time count doesn't work for young people. And then locally, just working with local and state partners to increase awareness of the scope of this issue and also use numbers for better advocacy and funding. And then the last thing that I would say is I think that one thing that we've been thinking about as we gear up for 2015 is about if we do have better numbers, how to disseminate them so that people understand what we're talking about. I think our goal is to release a report after the 2015 counts come out that shows numbers next to each other, so that, for example, you see like San Francisco's point-in-time count number right next to its McKinney-Vento number, right next to any kind of larger definitions that it has, so that those numbers are all seen as multiple snapshots on the same issue instead of different one camera is broken and the other one is right, kind of the pitted against each other issue. And I think this is, I'm excited about this because I think this is sort of the key part of evaluation in general, is sort of getting better data and then using it to better share it in a way that people can understand and that informs the conversation around youth. So we are hoping to count better in California and nationwide so that we can inform this conversation. So if you have any questions, you can email us, you can join our Google group, you can communicate any questions on our Google group, so please share widely. And then thank you to the Wellness Foundation, who's been our funder for this, and also to a lot of people who have been teaching us about the point-in-time counts and how to do it better. Okay.